Well, as I was, preparing for this evening, I was looking at this parable of the rich fool. It's quite a strong word, isn't it? The fool. And it made me think of various things that have been going on in the news in the last few months. And one of the things that popped into my mind was Novak Djokovic, okay, tennis player. Do you remember just a few weeks ago, there was an issue of pay, equal pay. That was the issue in the news, and there was this whole news story about fighting for your rights of how much you should get paid, and there was a question of whether men should be paid the same as women or vice versa, should women be paid the same as men, and he was on the news and kind of appeared to be saying something like this. He said, men should fight for their rights, men should fight to get more money. That's what he was saying, okay? The world's number one tennis player saying that men should fight for more pay, okay? It's just really interesting whether you agree or disagree. So I was just curious as to how much money he earned, okay? And I calculated it out, okay? Got the figure right here. Okay, £19,230, okay? £19,230 a day. A day. Whether the figures are right or not, but £19,230 a day, but that's not him playing tennis. That's not for him playing tennis. That's just for sponsorship. That's just for sponsorship. It's interesting, isn't it, if we open up this topic of money or of how much money somebody should have. I'm not here to talk about tennis tonight, and we can... You can dispute or disagree, or you can talk about Novak Djokovic, but the point is this. As one person maybe says, fight for more money, even more money than £19,230 a day, for not even playing tennis, but for sponsorship. There are people in the world fighting for not £19,230 a day, but maybe there are people fighting for just £1 a day. People in this world who have very little money, and what they're fighting for is just enough money to keep themselves alive and to keep themselves going. We all fight for different things, don't we? And in this world, there is this great fight for possessions, for wealth, for just keeping ourselves going, not the Novak Djokovic or the celebrities or the millionaires or the billionaires. We all need money to keep ourselves going, don't we? Not maybe those kinds of figures. There is a man in this story that comes to Jesus and he's fighting for something. He wants something. But what he wants, Jesus is kind of saying to him, look, life is not about what you're asking for. It's much more than that. In chapter 12 in the Gospel of Luke, a man from the crowd says to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. And Jesus kind of says, well, listen, who appointed me a judge or an arbitrator over this matter? Okay, so here's this man. He's come to Jesus. He's fighting with his brother for the inheritance. And we don't know how much the inheritance is, whether it's the amount of money that maybe Novak Djokovic makes or maybe just the amount of money that you need to get to live on each day, okay? We don't know, but the point is, he's fighting for this money, isn't he? And he comes to Jesus, and he wants Jesus to help him with his problem. He wants Jesus to come and maybe be an intermediary or to mediate and to kind of help them find the right solution. He wants what's important to him, and we don't know how important it is. But what we do know for this man, it's so important that he comes to Jesus. He doesn't come to Jesus like some other people do and say, well, I need to be healed of my paralysis or my blindness or my deafness or I've got leprosy. He doesn't come to Jesus for any of that. But his big problem is it's a financial issue. And he comes to Jesus and he wants Jesus to help him. But you see, Jesus is very clear, and the Bible is very clear, that Jesus is saying he's not the right kind of person to sort this problem out. There are other people that can sort this problem out for this man. The other man would have had a rabbi. The rabbi could have explained the Old Testament rules about money and about inheritance laws. And he could have gone to the rabbi and the rabbi could have helped him. He doesn't need Jesus to help him out with this particular issue. Jesus is kind of saying, listen, there are plenty of other people to sort this out. I'm not a judge. I'm not an arbitrator. I'm not an intermediary. You don't need me for that. There's other people to sort this out. And he says to him in verse 15, take heed. Watch out. Beware. Watch out. Because life does not consist in having things. Life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. You see, just as this man thinks that his greatest problem at the moment, at the present time, is his inheritance through his brother and how much money he has. That's his problem. We don't know how much it is. But Jesus is saying, look, life's not about that problem. Life's not about that problem. There are other people who come to Jesus with their problems. There's a man who comes to Jesus with his paralysis. But Jesus doesn't heal him first of his paralysis, because Jesus is saying that there is a greater problem than your paralysis. And Jesus is pointing out to this man, there's a greater problem than money. Beware that life's not about how much money you have. Life's not about your possessions. There's something even more important. And we've got to take care. We've got to be on our guard. Driving down the M4. Take any road. You see all these signs, don't you? The kids had it the other day. All the signs that you might see on the road, and you kind of all the warning signs that do you remember? You know, it was just a couple of weeks ago. There was a shark in the water. What sign does that mean? You know, don't go swimming in the water. If you do, you'll probably die. Okay, there's different signs about it as you drive, but there's different kinds of signs for different kind of things, aren't there? There are the brown signs, aren't there? The kind of the tourism signs. I'm assuming they're all tourism signs, but the brown signs. They're information signs, aren't they? But then there's the other signs in red triangles, aren't there? Or red circles. The warning signs. The hazard signs. You've got different signs for different things. And when this man comes to Jesus, he's saying to him, look, be really careful. Take heed. Be warned. Beware. This isn't the tourism sign of, let me just quickly tell you about something that, you know, just so you're aware that if you go to this place, then it's not an information thing that Jesus is doing. It's one of these warning signs. It's one of these red signs. Jesus is saying, look, watch out. Watch out. Life does not consist in the abundance of things. Life's not about money. Watch out for greed, because life is much more than that. The government has kind of slowly cottoned on to life being really important, hasn't it? Smoking cigarettes, okay? I smoked cigarettes for 10 years and go to the shop and you'd be able to see all the cigarettes on offer, couldn't you? And you look at all the colours and the prices and you'll say, well, I'll have that one. I'll have the red one. Whereas you go to the shop now, they're all behind a closet, aren't they? They're all hidden out of view. And then when you pull the shutter up, they're all in similar sized packets, aren't they? With similar warnings, showing you how serious it is. This is a warning. Because the government wants you to know it's deadly, isn't it? And this is the kind of language that Jesus is using. And he's saying, take heed. Beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. You see, Jesus knows that we are much more than simply the bodies we have. We are much more than what you see. We are much more than that. We're body and soul. We're living beings. We're eternal beings. Even though we die, we will live on in eternity. What eternity we live on, we'll come to later. But we are much more than just what this life has to offer. And you see, Jesus is showing us a warning sign. You go to a shop, you go to the supermarket. What's the first thing that you see as soon as you walk into a supermarket? Well, it's magazines, isn't it? Magazines. And what do the magazines do? They show you pretty pictures, don't they? Pretty pictures of pretty ladies and fit men. They show you pretty pictures of the people that you should aspire to be. And they show you things like wrinkles, don't they? They show you wrinkles. And they say, when you see the signs of wrinkles, buy this cream. They take a very normal approach to it, don't they? They take a very sanitized approach to it. It's just very normal. It's just like buying a carton of milk, isn't it? You pull it off the shelf and you put it in your cereal and you drink it. It's just like buying a cereal bar, isn't it? You grab a chocolate bar, you buy a chocolate bar, you eat and you throw the wrapper away. It's just very normal, isn't it? You just see a magazine of somebody looking a little bit older and you buy it and you buy the cream or you buy the moisturizer and you make yourself look pretty. It's just very normal, isn't it? And it's kind of so wrong, isn't it? Think of wrinkles, for example. The world treats wrinkles as if they're just these normal things. And patch it up with some moisturizer and some makeup, and it will go away. But to Jesus, getting old is a sign that is serious, isn't it? That we're getting old, and one day we will die. Life is much more than just our possessions, isn't it? For one day, all of us have to face the inevitable. Our life is much more than the things that we own and the things that we possess. And Jesus can deal with our real problem. He can deal with our souls. Where does my soul go? Where do I go after I die? No magazine will help you with that problem. But Jesus, here in this parable, illustrates for us what we ought not to be like. He says to this man, look, life doesn't consist in the abundance of things. And then he speaks this parable. Then he speaks a story. And the story is there to show us how we can respond to the world saying to us, well, have more of this. Or have more of that. Or go and get a good job and have more money. Or get a bigger house. Or if you're not interested in those kinds of things, well, go and get famous. Or have lots of friends. Or have a good reputation. The world throws all those kinds of things at us, doesn't it? Have this, have that. Whereas the parable kind of shows us what we ought not to be like. Here's Jesus and he talks about the real problem with the story of a farmer. He spoke a parable to them saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought with himself, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I'll do this. I'll pull down my barns and build bigger ones. And in the bigger barns, I'll store all my goods. And I'll say to my soul, soul, take it easy. You've got many good years laid up. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Here's a really simple story. It's such a simple story that it doesn't take anyone religious to understand it. It's a story about a farmer. And he's a great farmer. He's had a really good bumper crop this year. He's had such a good bumper crop that his barns that he's got just aren't big enough to hold all his crops. He's had a great year. He's probably a smart man. He's invested wisely. He's probably a good gardener. Probably not a gardener, it's probably a bit too big for a garden, isn't it? A good farmer, we'll stick with a good farmer. Or a good agriculturist. He's got a good bumper crop. He's in smart. He's intelligent. He's shrewd. He's planned well. He's wise in his job, perhaps. He's thought it through carefully. So much so But at this point in time, he's got so much crops, he's got so many goods, he just doesn't know what to do with them. And so he makes an even smarter decision, doesn't he? I'll break down the barns that I have got and I'll build bigger ones. Here is a man who's full of plans. Here is a man who's kind of made all the right plans in one sense. Thinking about the problems he has, thinking about the farming skills he's got, thinking about the possessions that he's got, thinking about protecting the future, thinking about planning ahead for maybe his livelihood. He's planned all that out. And if you're looking at this man, you think, well, actually, he's doing pretty well. He's planned it. There's a point in my life when I made lots of plans. I worked. I worked hard. I saved my money. Not much, but enough. I bought a plane ticket. And I flew halfway across the world. And there my plans were that I would work abroad. And I would take the little money that I had and I would make more money out of it. And by making more money out of it, I would have an even better lifestyle than I had in this country. So that's what I did. I took my money, I took my plane ticket, and I went off to Canada. And if you know anything about Canada, it's reasonably cheap over there compared to here. So you get more for your money. It made sense. So that's exactly what I did. I took my money, I took my things, and I moved. And I planned to be out there for a whole year, working, establishing myself, and settling myself down to have a better life. A bit like the farmer here, making plans, being smart, looking forward, making sure that I'd be looked after in a year's time. So this is what happened. I found out about travelling in Canada. And I found out that if you travel from Vancouver to Victoria, Victoria's an island just off Vancouver on the west coast, if you travel from Vancouver to Victoria, you might see whales, okay? Not whales this country, whales, you know, proper whales, the ones in the sea. You might see whales. So I thought, oh, that's a great idea. You might see whales. Bit of travelling, not going to hurt a year out, bit of travelling. So this is what I did. I found out all the costs, as you do, and I found out you could catch a boat, catch a ferry, and it would take its time and you'd get to Victoria Island. I also found out you could catch a plane. You could catch a plane from the harbour in Vancouver and you could fly over to Victoria. So I was like, well, sounds great, doesn't it? Watching whales. So I thought, well, I'm going to catch the plane, aren't I? So I found out the costs. And the cost of the plane ticket was far too high. It was far too high. Couldn't afford it. So this is what I did. I took everything that I had and everything that I possessed. And as if it were, I broke it all down. I sold it all. So everything that I took with me to Vancouver, I went to a shop and I sold everything that I had. I had my bike, I sold it. And it gave me the cash. And I went to the harbour and I paid for the plane ticket. And I got on the plane. Getting really excited now, I was going to watch some whales. Then it dawned on me it was going to be a very small plane. It was a business plane, actually. And if you go into a business plane, they tend to be very small because they're for business people and you don't get many people catching these flights. And I was sitting on this chair about this big. And the alleyway was about this big. And then the next person was on another chair about this big. And so we were literally that far apart from each other, squeezed in this little plane. And there was only about 10 seats in the plane. And I was a bit puzzled as to how small the plane was. And it was a seaplane. And there were propellers. And if you've ever been on a seaplane, they get very loud. And they get very bumpy. And I was still struggling with this idea that I'd just spent all my money on this seaplane ticket. And then all of a sudden, as we started taking off, and I thought I was going to die because it was so turbulent on the water, we took off. And then I thought, well, let's go and see some whales. But then I realised that the plane, being so small, had really small windows. And the windows were about this small. And because it was an old plane, you know when windows are slightly scratched, you know? They were a bit cloudy. And as I looked out of this window, I could just about see from the great height up the sea. And just as I was looking for more whales, and I was looking down there, I was thinking, how many whales can I see? We started to descend. And within about 15 minutes, the very expensive plane journey I'd just taken just ended like that. And we landed at Victoria. And in the space of 15 minutes, in that short space where I'd actually seen no whales at all, I'd spent all the money that I'd ever had, and it was gone. Still had to get back from Victoria though, didn't I? And the only way to get back was on the boat, which was much cheaper. Turns out that the boat took an awfully long time. But in the awfully long time that you took on the boat that was much cheaper, there was a much greater likelihood of seeing whales than a 15-minute journey in a seaplane. It's strange, isn't it? That you can throw away everything just for the sake of something that's short and that doesn't satisfy. You can throw away everything just for the sake of something short that can never fully satisfy. Here is the rich farmer, and he's made all these plans. He's put everything into this farm and into these barns. And as he's put all his, as it were, eggs into one basket, and he thinks that he'll take it easy for many years, and he's put his feet up and eat, drink and be merry, what does God do? He comes that evening and he takes his life away. Do you see what Jesus is trying to say? Life is much more than the abundance of things. Life is much more than money and goods and houses and your reputation and your friends and your travelling and your highs and your experiences. Because for this man, he put everything into that farm only for it to be taken away in the blink of an eye. Life is much more than the plans that we make. Listen to what Woodrow Wilson, a former American president, said. He said this: I would rather fail in a cause that will ultimately succeed than succeed in a cause that will ultimately fail. You get that? I would rather fail in a cause that will ultimately succeed than succeed in a cause that will ultimately fail. Here is the farmer who succeeded in a way in this world. He had everything. But ultimately he failed. Because he wasn't rich towards God. He'd forgot that there is a creator. There is a creator that we have to give an account to for the way we've lived. And as Jesus is pointing out in this story, here is a man who was only rich to himself, but not rich towards God. And all those things that he worked his life for, all those things that we had, in a moment, were gone. It's like the Egyptian tombs, isn't it? What's the point of all the gold and all the jewellery and all the things that get buried in, you know, tombs like Tutankhamun? What's the point of it all? Well, in one sense, the point of it is this, is that when somebody discovers the tomb, they nick it. They steal it. Who gets what you've prepared for yourself? You can't take it with you. Because we are born into this world with nothing. And we leave with nothing. And as Jesus is pointing out, life is much more than the things that we have. But finally, let's consider God's timing. God's precise timing. Do you see how the parable ends? But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. This night your soul will be required of you. I often ask the question, why is Jesus using quite strong language, fool, when we also think that God is love, isn't it? It's quite a strong word, isn't it? Why is he a fool? The reason why he's a fool is he forgets about God's precise timing. That God is in control of your life and mine. God is the one who gives us breath and takes it away. God is the one who dictates the number of minutes and the days and the hours and the years that we live. And for this man who was not rich towards God, he forgot who is in control of his life. And in that precise timing, God demanded his life. That's why he was a fool. He didn't realize that God at any time could intervene. Before I became a Christian, this is what happened. The day that I'd become a Christian, I had this discussion to myself. And the discussion went something like this. And I don't know if you've had this discussion, maybe you have, maybe you should talk to others about it. I began to weigh up whether or not it was worth following Jesus. I began to weigh up whether or not it was all worth it. I started to think to myself, well, if I follow Jesus, I'll be forgiven and I can have eternal life. But if I say no to that, then I can live in the abundance of my things. And I can follow my pursuits, my fun lifestyle, the relationships, the money, the travelling. I can pursue all those things and I can enjoy all those things. And I started to weigh it up. And I started to think to myself, well, if I follow God, I'm going to have to stop living for myself. But I remember there was one moment that made me really think. And it was this. It was all about God's timing. What I realised in that afternoon was that if I was going to say no to following Jesus, then I might never have had the opportunity again. I thought to myself, I said, do you know what, it all makes sense. It all makes sense that life is much more than pleasures of travelling. Life is much more than earning lots of money. I'd realised that for myself when it all gone in an instant. Life is much more than having a reputation that where everyone thinks highly of you. Life is much more than all those things. They don't satisfy. Life is about Jesus. Life is about a relationship with God. Life is about a relationship with God because we are body and soul and only Jesus can satisfy our soul. And I realized in that afternoon that if I'd said no to Jesus, that I might never have that opportunity again. And you see, that is what terrified me. That moment of knowing that God was inviting me to say sorry for living in a way that was full of covetousness, of full of greed, of living for myself. If I'd said no to that very moment, that I might never have that moment again, and I might walk away living for myself, never being right with God. And that terrified me. And it was on that day that I followed Jesus. Do you see what makes this man a fool? He forgot about the precise timing that God has. That at a very moment, unannounced, that life can be taken away from you. When I was growing up in church, I did this very, very thing that you might have done. I heard the gospel message. I heard the wonder that Jesus calls people who are greedy. I heard this wonderful message that Jesus, despite what we are like, that we live selfishly, that we reject him, that we live for ourselves. Despite all that, he still loves us and he calls us. This is what I said. I remember it. I was probably about 13. And I heard this gospel message and I said, you know what I said? Maybe we did. I said, you know what? I get it. But I'll follow Jesus later. I remember, I think it was at 15, I remember going to church, and I remember getting it. That Jesus is the way to the Father and the only way to have it. I remember I got it. And I said, do you know what, I'll do it later. I remember in my 20s, I got it. I understood it. That life couldn't satisfy me in the abundance of the things that I have. And I knew it, and I knew I was disappointed. But I kept saying, well, I'll do it later. But do you see where the fool in the story is? He didn't realise of God's precise timing. You see, two ways that God could intervene, isn't it? God could intervene in this way. He could call you. He could stir up your heart. He could change you. He could invite you. He could show you your sin. And he could show you that you need him. And he can call you. But you see, that doesn't happen here, does it? In this story, that doesn't happen here. In this story, when God intervenes, that's the point and the precise timing when God calls this man to his death. You see, we need to remember God's precise timing. That one day God will intervene. But he might not intervene in the way we'd like him to. Maybe I'll become a Christian later on. Maybe I'll become a Christian when I'm 25 or 30. Maybe I'll become a Christian when I've tried all the fun stuff. Maybe I'll become a Christian when I've had as many relationships as I can have. Then I'll settle down and become a Christian. Maybe I'll become a Christian. Do you know what? I tell you what. God is love. God is merciful. Do you know what I'll do? I'll become a Christian when I've lived my life and I'm on my deathbed. Then I'll become a Christian. And do you see that's what is the wrong thing to think? Because God's precise timing in this parable is when God did intervene. It was that very night. His soul was required of him. Let me ask you. Let me plead with you. Don't be a fool. Don't be a fool. Don't think that tomorrow will be the day that you can come to Jesus. Don't think the next year will be the time that you can come to Jesus. Because today is the day of salvation. Today is the day that you need to come. But also, if you are somebody who has already come to Jesus, you might sometimes think that this story is a story just for people who aren't Christians. Well, in one sense, it's not, is it? It's the whole Bible. It's written to all of us. And sometimes even Christians think in the way that this rich man thinks. Have you ever thought like this rich man as a Christian? You've thought to yourself, I won't speak to my family member today about Jesus because I can wait till tomorrow. I won't speak to my sister or my brother or my husband or my aunt or my daughter or my grandchild. Do you know what? I won't speak to them today. I'm a bit afraid to speak to them today. But do you know what? I'll wait till next week. Or the time that I'm feeling more up to it. And do you see how sometimes even Christians can be utterly foolish because we've forgotten about God's precise timing. That this very night his soul will be required of him. Let's look at this wonderful warning from Jesus. That he loves us. He's not like those magazines that paint a nice picture and say, patch this up. He says, beware. Be careful. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Don't live for yourself. Don't live for things that will ultimately fail, even though they might succeed. Don't have somebody else rob you of your soul. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait till next year. Don't wait till next week or tomorrow to tell your loved one about Jesus. Remember God's precise timing, that today is the day of salvation.